everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, Executive Coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tonight, our topic is A Great American City Hidden in Plain Sight. And our guest tonight is Andrew Bazile, Jr. Mr. Bazile is the chair of Young Bazile, a 16-attorney intellectual property firm with offices in Michigan and Silicon Valley. His practice emphasizes intellectual property and technology-related areas such as alliances. A published author in his field, Andy received his law degree cum laude from the University of Michigan in 1989 and his bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and computer science from Princeton. We're really happy to have him here tonight. Welcome, Andy.
It's good to be here, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So nice to have you. So, Andy, when you talk about this great American city hidden in plain sight, which, by the way, I love that title, what are you referring to?
What I'm referring to is the collection of really extraordinary urban assets in metropolitan Detroit, strung out between downtown Detroit and Pontiac. And we have some wonderful communities, Birmingham, Midtown Detroit, Ferndale. But because of the spatial configuration, I don't think they're really recognized for the great urban community that they are.
Yeah, I would agree. I would definitely agree. One of the statements that you made, you know, you sent me a little information in advance, which was very helpful, but I was intrigued by. You said, business follows talent and wealth, not vice versa.
Well,
so can you talk to me about that?
Exactly. I mean, I have spent most of my adult life outside of Detroit in places like Chicago and San Francisco, places that are very dynamic and very successful. And the thing I noticed in working and hiring in those markets was that the best and the brightest tended to gravitate to those centers. It wasn't that they had a great job waiting for them there. It's that they wanted to be there, and therefore the companies that wanted to tap into that talent also wanted to be there. I think place is really important, especially when you talk about the highly mobile, sophisticated knowledge worker. And maybe one of the problems we have here in Michigan is that historically we have not really had at least a perceived strong offering for this type of person. And specifically what we've lacked is a strong urban living option. We've got beautiful suburbs, but a lot of these people want to live in exciting, walkable urban communities. And that's what we're missing here in Michigan.
You sound pretty into this. How did you, what path led you to being
I am into it. I've always been
excited about, you know, this matters to you. Tell me about that.
It matters a lot to me. I always have been a very an ardent champion of the city of Detroit and of the Detroit metropolitan area. And watching it decline since I was born in 1964 has always been personally painful for me. And ultimately, I ended up leaving in 1982 and enjoying life in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, in San Francisco. When I came back here 4 years ago for family reasons, I really had a hard time personally adjusting from the excitement of a big, successful city like San Francisco to living in the Detroit area. And it frustrated me that Detroit was not more like the places that I had lived in that I enjoyed living in so much. And one day when I was, you know, feeling sorry for myself for living in Southeast Michigan, I went down to Royal Oak with my wife, and we sat in downtown Royal Oak, and I looked around, and I said to my wife, you know, it's funny. If this town, downtown Royal Oak, this square mile, were anywhere in the city of Chicago, it would be an A-list neighborhood. And I thought about it, and I realized so would Birmingham. And Ferndale would be a very desirable neighborhood. And we have lots of really desirable neighborhoods that are walkable, traditional urban-style communities with square street grids as opposed to a more of a sprawling suburb and cul-de-sac. These communities in South Oakland County and into Detroit all the way to downtown are really, even though they may not be within the municipal boundaries of Detroit, are really very much urban communities and really appealing urban communities. And I began to look at a map and to sort of itemize or inventory in my mind all the assets, all the great neighborhoods, Palmer Woods, Hamtramck, Midtown, downtown Detroit, Ferndale, Birmingham, Royal Oak, all the great neighborhoods and all the great assets, the zoo, the pro football team, the pro sports teams, the cultural institutions. And I thought to myself, my gosh, if all this stuff were packaged in a 6x6 mile grid or square, mm-hmm. like a traditional city, it would be
right.
considered a fantastic city. I mean, it would have some, you know, worn edges, perhaps. I mean, not all of downtown and Midtown and Detroit along Woodward is you know, perfectly upscale, but it's still pretty cool. And if the whole totality of it were packaged together in one walkable, integrated, you know, place, I think we wouldn't be having this conversation. I think people would already recognize that Detroit was an amazing city. And so I began to think, well, how do we overcome this challenge? We've got so many great assets, but they're splayed out along 22 miles of the Woodward Corridor. How do we leverage that more effectively and improve both the perception and the reality to create, within Southeast Michigan, a viable urban living opportunity for the crucial people of skill and knowledge and wealth that prefer that kind of an environment and have chosen to move live elsewhere because we haven't been able to offer it.
Yeah, yeah. So the urban living thing here in Ann Arbor, I know that the DDA has put a lot of energy into and that the chamber recognizes that we need to do something and really value and prioritize keeping young people here, keeping young professionals here. Particularly here, we've got all these people that graduate, you know, with bachelor's degrees all the way up to doctorates, and then they'll go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be just to Chicago, but
mm-hmm.
they'll go elsewhere rather than stay in Michigan. So is that what you're talking about in terms of the urban need, the idea to create an environment where young people would be interested, or is it more than that?
Well, you know, that's exactly what I'm talking about, but I think it's more than that. And it's
okay.
always funny to me to have this conversation in Southeast Michigan, hear it framed in terms of young people, as if these urban amenities were things that only appealed to young people, and this was some kind of avant-garde, you know, youth thing, like text messaging or something, some flashy new trendy thing. And maybe because of that, people don't really take it very seriously. I want to tell you a quick story about an airplane ride that I had
okay.
A year or two ago. I was coming back from Tokyo, where I was visiting one of my clients, and I sat next to a 65-year-old Chinese grandmother who was also flying back to the United States. And we got to talking because it was a 13-hour plane ride, and she told me her life story, how she had been born and raised in Shanghai, had lived under the horror of Chairman Mao and the Cultural Revolution, had lived in a two-bedroom apartment with 12 people. They had to take turns sleeping because there wasn't enough bed space. And now she was 65 years old, and she was living in Troy, Michigan. Her husband was an executive at a Chinese auto supplier, and he was working at one of his clients or customers' offices with a view toward finding a potential location for his Chinese company to open up their first American office. And I said to her, wow, is there any chance your husband will decide to put this office in metropolitan Detroit? And she looked at me and said, I hope not. Every night at dinner, I beg him to get me out of here. And I was a little taken back by that. I'm thinking
sure.
you know, she had grown up in the poverty of Maoist China, and perhaps she would find Troy an appealing place. And she said she just hated living here, and she wanted to live in Chicago or even Memphis, she talked about she'd be willing to live in. And I asked her, what don't you like about it? And she said, I can't stand how everything is so spread out. There are no trains or buses. I have to drive everywhere, which I don't enjoy doing. And, you know, if I'm not in my car, I'm trapped in my house in a cul-de-sac. And I thought to myself, this is exactly the kind of complaint that young people offer. And I think in Detroit, we look at this as a generational thing, when in reality it's mm-hmm. not. In San Francisco, in the million-dollar condos of Chicago, in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, in Washington, D.C., there are all kinds of people with wealth and experience and, you know, basically leaders in business and other avenues of life who really prefer this kind of an environment. And I think there's a disconnect between that class of people in Southeast Michigan because we we here have a culture that just kind of discounts that. It's nice to go visit, but really what you want is a big house with acreage and a yard, and that's what's really valuable and important, and time for your family. And those things are valuable. We don't want to take away from them. But we have to also, in addition to having these beautiful suburbs, have to have a better offering for those people who want to live in cities. And I don't think we can snap our fingers and make Detroit's problems evaporate and turn that into an urban paradise. But I think if we take the best of Detroit and the best of our inner suburbs and we look at it in its totality, it really is a more compelling case than you might suppose. And the trick, I think, is to come up with strategies for leveraging those resources and overcoming the odd spatial configuration that makes things so far apart, and to improve both the perception of the area as a place with urban assets and the reality of the place by fostering more of those urban assets.
Yeah, I want to come back to that. So, Andy, I know you travel a lot, and I know you go back and forth from Silicon Valley. How would you say that the Detroit area, the metropolitan Detroit area that we're talking about, and or the Woodward Corridor, compare with other cities?
Well, you know, this is really an interesting question and a source of great frustration for me. There are incredible human assets in the Detroit area. There are enormous numbers of technology workers. I don't think people realize that in terms of technology jobs and the volume of technology business, metropolitan Detroit is very competitive with a lot of places that are perceived perhaps as being farther along than we are. I think we rank like 9th or 10th nationally, so we're comparable to places, for example, like Minneapolis or in Austin. We do have a great technology presence here, but what frustrates me is we don't capitalize on it. You don't see the fermentation of new technology companies the way you do in Silicon Valley. I think there are some very specific reasons for that.
So that's something that you're involved in with your work, right?
Well yes. You know, in addition to trying to promote the idea of deeper and urbanization of the Woodward Corridor, I wanted to also at the same time do whatever I could to foster the kind of entrepreneurial activity that seems so common in Silicon Valley but not here. So our law firm had some extra office space, and we created a charity called the North Woodward Tech Incubator. And what we did with we offered the space to promising technology companies in the metropolitan Detroit area. We have 8 now at the incubator. It's northwoodward.org, northwoodward.org. And 4 are resident, 4 are virtual, and they're really doing great. They're generating revenues. They've hired their first employees, and it's they're all 25-year-old guys running these companies. They all live in Royal Oak. They all complain their friends have moved to Chicago and New York and San Francisco, but they're hanging tough, and they're making a go of it in Detroit, and we're doing everything in our power to help them succeed.
That is so cool. I just love that. You know, and I know so many people who say, you know, I really want to stay here in Michigan. I want to be here. I have family here. I have grown up here. I have roots here. And they recognize all the wonderful things that Michigan has to offer, not just culturally, but just, you know, all kinds of wonderful things. But it's hard for them because of these kinds of things. Well, that's really interesting. I love the incubator idea. So is that something that you think other businesses, other companies could replicate, could use?
Absolutely. If you have extra office space and are willing to put time in mentoring the tenants, anybody could do it. Law firms are ideal hosts. I think accounting firms would be good candidates. The key is to find the right mix of tenants. And to in our case, we focused on web-centric companies, because there's a low barrier to entry, and it was something of interest to the young entrepreneurs that we wanted to attract. And you also have to be willing to spend a lot of time. I probably spend an hour a day with my companies just to, you know, talk to them, see how they're doing, help them set milestones, you know, provide some mentorship / supervision.
Right.
I don't think they'd call it supervision, but there's an element of that as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I can hear in your voice you like that.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah,
gratifying to watch
fun.
These companies.
So let's take a little break here and let people know who we are and what we're doing, okay? Hang on just for a minute. We'll come back. If you are just joining us now, you're listening to the Leadership Focus Radio Show. You can listen to us live on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern or download the show and listen later. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, and tonight we're talking with Andy Bazile about a great American city hidden in plain sight. So back to you, Andy. We've talked about rebranding our urban core. How would we do that?
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to take anything away from the city of Detroit proper, but I think there has been a notion that's been tossed about in economic development circles of having sub-regions of our overall region develop their own independent identity. And I think a good candidate for that would be the Woodward Corridor. And I think, I don't know, maybe you could just call it the Woodward Corridor. But it's maybe through employers, through realtors, through merchants, through the Woodward Avenue Action Association, that this region develops an identity and a reputation, hopefully a national reputation, as a place with strong urban assets. If you're coming to Detroit and you love living in a city, this would be your first stop, one of the communities along this corridor. I think a lot of that is marketing and positioning, and that's a big part of the puzzle. The other part of the puzzle is the underlying reality, not just the perception, but changing the underlying reality as well.
So what would you envision as our opportunities then? How would we do that?
Well,
what could we do?
You know, it's funny. I don't think it would take a ton of money to make a big impact. The biggest problem we have in the Woodward Corridor, north of 8 Mile anyway, is that the road itself is not at all walkable. Even though it anchors a really cool, walkable, and traditional urban environment with communities like Hyena Woods, and Royal Oak, and Birmingham, and Beverly Hills, the road itself is hostile to pedestrians. And I think that the people who oversee the road, who have regulatory authority over the road, really aren't focused on the notion of walkability. Their job is traffic flow. So there's a little bit of a policy tension, and I think we need to make some specific changes, such as, for example, lowering the speed limit a few miles an hour, maybe to 40 or 35 when the traffic goes through those crucial nodes like downtown Birmingham. I think that we could improve the streetscape. I think we could do something about bike lanes or bike paths, perhaps, to connect some of these communities. One thing I would like to see happen, which would require some resources, is to fill in the hole at 13 Mile and Woodward. You have a lot of walkable communities up and down this avenue, but 13 Mile and Woodward is really a profoundly unwalkable place. And what's really interesting is that this intersection, which you may drive by every day and not think twice of, is the home to the largest employer in Oakland County. Beaumont Hospital is there. And it's one of the busiest bus stops in the county. And it is ideally suited to build transit-oriented, walkable transit-oriented community wrapped around the hospital. I actually commissioned an urban planning firm to do a study with my own money and present it to the hospital in the hopes of furthering their thinking. And they have some very progressive ideas about what to do with that space. But I think that would require capital, but that would be an essential piece, because if you filled in that particular hole, then you would have almost continuous walkable community stretching from 60 Mile to 8 Mile. And then finally transit. That's really what's required. And I don't know if the state has the wherewithal to ever do it, but if you want to seal the deal and really establish a viable, true urban community from Birmingham to downtown Detroit, you would do it with transit.
Sure. Well, I just remember my Michigan history and the pictures and the paintings, actually, that were drawn of the vision for the Woodward Corridor. And it was, you know, it was splendid. It had trees. It had walkways. It had, you know, beautiful buildings all the way out of the city for miles and miles and miles and miles. And that was what it was designed to do, but somehow it got I don't know, abruptly circumvented by other things. And so this would really be a return to a very old but very good idea.
Exactly. So that the metropolitan Detroit area could have an offering to compete with other cities that have urban amenities. And it's both urban in the city and in the suburbs. It encompasses both, leverages the strengths of both. It's not all in the hands of one municipality. If one government falls down, there's the one next door that can pick up the slack.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting. So, you know, a lot of these ideas are pretty cheap to do. They're not unreasonable things to think of communities assuming. And, you know, some of them cost nothing except, you know, a little political will to reduce the speed limit in selected
mm-hmm.
areas, for instance.
It would make a monumental difference for Birmingham and its efforts to expand its downtown east of Woodward. Downtown's west of Woodward now. They want to develop east of Woodward. But it's almost impossible for a pedestrian to safely cross the street. And as long as that situation remains the case, I think that the development efforts of Birmingham will be stymied.
Sure. And, of course, the more walkable an area is, the more people want to live there and walk to work. You know, even thinking of Beaumont, I mean, think about if a bunch of people could live in the immediate vicinity and walk or bike to work. Wouldn't that be cool?
Exactly. And I think the fundamental culprit is that a lot of people who are long-term residents of our region and a lot of people who have been here for 50, 60 years of their life and are now in positions of great authority, they're running governments or they're running businesses,
mm-hmm.
have developed a mindset that cities are bad, they're dangerous, they're places to avoid. You don't want people walking, you want a car, you want the security exclusion and isolation that the automobile can lend to a community. And I think there's been a lot of development that's been quite calculated in along those lines. And so it's really a change of mindset because I think in other places like Chicago or San Francisco, people think of cities as great and they want to have an urban area. And it's the suburbs that are kind of sometimes looked as maybe the second tier of place to live. The other side of the coin, too, is that, you know, we are a town that really enjoys driving. And a lot of the reason why these walkable communities haven't thrived here, as developers will tell you, is because they don't have the buyers in place. It's a chicken and the egg problem. The people who like walkable communities move to New York. The people who don't stay here. And so if you're going to develop a walkable community, you got to have someone to buy into the, you know, to buy it. Otherwise, it's a money-losing proposition. I think, you know, it's peculiar to me sometimes when I speak to people in town that they have a view that riding the bus is somehow, I don't know, beneath them or not the thing that a person would do.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, when I was in Chicago and San Francisco, I rode the bus every day along with all the other lawyers and doctors and Indian chiefs that, you know, were working in downtown. So it's kind of a strange perspective, and I think we have to overcome at all levels of our community this notion, and perhaps the answer is to start small and build on that success.
Sure. Well, I just can't imagine that gas prices are not going to go up again sometime in the relatively near future, and that people are again going to be looking at how can I reduce my commuting expenses,
mm-hmm.
and that these things will get more appealing because the cost of, for instance, many households having two or three cars. So everybody can drive everywhere instead of being able to get places without a car. And how wonderful it would be if you could live someplace where you could walk or bike to work and you only needed to rent a car for excursions out of town.
Well, you know, it's funny. Chicago, I once read a few years ago that Chicago is the biggest market for General Motors. But it's also a city that has great mass transportation. So I know a lot of folks in Detroit are eager to keep selling cars and have people keep driving cars. I listening to you talk, I was laughing in my mind because I thought all the people make a living with the automobile industry. Well, what do they do with that? But you know, I think that you can have both. And
I do too.
You know, I wish I was Bill Gates and I had billions of dollars to give to this problem, because I think it could easily be solved, in fact, for far less than that. But I, you know, as an individual person, it's hard to affect some of these changes. But I think what's crucial is to start out with at least one community that is truly walkable. And then as that succeeds and grows, you can extend on. And so we're close in Birmingham and Royal Oak, but not really. You still really can't, you know, have the full range of employment opportunities. I mean, Birmingham's got jobs, but no, you know, you can't buy a pack of gum.
Right.
Royal Oak, you can buy the pack of gum, but your job is in, you know, 10 miles away in Troy. So we
right.
really need to focus on nurturing those communities and the communities in Detroit to start to build some success. And as that takes off, I think it will further more interest among people who live in the area into having a walkable lifestyle.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. So, chicken or the egg? So, what can I know this is a big gnarly problem, but what can individuals do if somebody's listening here today?
Well,
and they're saying, gee, you know, I love Detroit. It breaks my heart every time I see, you know, the urban blight, the lack of continuity with areas pulled together, the inability to, you know, walk anywhere to even go get lunch. You know,
well, I'll tell you, one thing that everyone can do is to think about changing their lifestyle, because you can't say, oh, I wish we had charming, walkable communities, but then not patronize them. So,
right.
For example, I will only go to a Target or Walmart or strip center as an absolute last resort, unless I absolutely cannot buy what I need within a place like Birmingham or Royal Oak. So you got to patronize these locations if you want them to thrive. And that would be something that everybody could do.
Yeah, yeah. Coincidentally, I'm just getting ready to launch a newsletter for the month of May, and I'm quoting the CEO from the Cleveland Clinic, who's talking about the billions of dollars that the country spends on obesity and on I believe heart disease, but basically these are things that if we made lifestyle changes, we could reduce greatly, and we could spend a much smaller proportion of our health care on fighting illness than we have to right now. And one of the things that I'm suggesting to people to do is that they pick some really small change. And I'm citing an article, a recent research article that came out in, I think, the Journal of the American Medicine, about this whole group of women that they followed for 13 years, like 34,000 women, and that they found the ones that didn't gain weight or were almost exactly at the weight that they were supposed to be when they started the study. The difference was they all did about an hour most days of exercise, and it was the equivalent of brisk walking. So, you know, if you walked, you had a 25, 30-minute walk to work, that would do it.
Moving from the hills of San Francisco to Detroit, I gained almost 40 pounds within 2 years.
I believe it.
I put it right on. It's an incredibly sedentary lifestyle. People in our office building across from Somerset Mall will get in their car to drive across Big Beaver Road, literally across the street to go to the mall, rather than simply walk. And in fact, you ask them why they don't walk, they'd say they're scared to, because the intersection is not walkable. Coolidge and
yeah.
Big Beaver, for example.
Well, I see we're just about out of time. This time has flown by. Andy, thank you so much for these ideas. The website that you talked about for people to get more information was northwoodward.org. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, okay. That's the incubator site. And I put together a 15-minute video, which is not quite ready for public display, but I hope to have that available soon, and that will elaborate a little bit more on this idea of the great American city hidden in plain sight.
Okay, great. And I can put that up on my website, too.
Oh, I'd appreciate that.
So people can come to that and get a link to that. So that sounds great. Thank you so much. Take care. This is really, really interesting. And I think it'll get some listeners cooking on this, too, because I know there are lots of people that care about this.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please go to blogtalkradio.com and become a friend and make us a favorite. To sign up for our free newsletter with more tips and strategies you can use, go to focuscoaching.net on the web. That's focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time, this is your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, urging you to be a better leader every day. Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, executive coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm.